Welcome to the Do Zone, where entrepreneurs go to get things done. I'm your host, Josh Thomas. You can find me on all social media at JT Literally. Each week, I bring on experts from a variety of backgrounds to share their secrets on how to optimize performance so you can take massive action and crush your goals. Speaking of optimizing performance, did you know the average response time for online inquiries is 47 hours? That's brutal. Our AI-powered assistants respond within an average of 9 seconds. If speed to lead is important to you, and it really should be because most customers move on if you don't get back to them within about 5 minutes, get your AI-powered assistant today. It takes less than 10 minutes to set up, requires no tech skills whatsoever. To learn more, you can go to anabots.ai. Once again, that's anabots.ai. Today's guest is Ali Horia. Ali left the lucrative profit-driven world of finance in 2016 to devote himself to his vision of a society where compassion, empathy, and social impact is at the heart of our actions. In 2020, he launched Compassivist to spread the vision and he develops and invents ways that we can sustainably produce and consume in order to make sustainable living a comfort and not a burden. Ali, welcome to the Do Zone. Tell me something you believe is the key to getting stuff done that most people wouldn't think of.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And simply put, compassion. I think if we approach every decision, every choice, every action that we're going to make, mindset, then that will open all the doors to how we're going to proceed through that choice. So, quick example, you're thinking of taking a trip to Paris for the Olympics, and you put your compassion hat on and you say, should I go or shouldn't I go? And then there's a whole bunch of reasons that tell you, yeah, you should go. And there'll be a whole bunch of reasons that tell you, you shouldn't go. Compassion comes in to bring in the collective, the whole world, and see how you're impacting the whole world with this travel. Is it going to be beneficial? Is it going to be detrimental? And so when you bring in compassion at the forefront, it leads you in ways that you err least, and you become less selfish with your choices, leading to a sustainable decision-making and action.
You know, compassion is an often misunderstood term. Sometimes I've seen it interpreted as almost like a weakness or a deference to say that, oh, I have compassion for him because he's really struggling. So it's almost like empathy, sort of. But I know, as somebody who has, we'll get into your transition story in a minute, which I want to hear. But as somebody who has built an entire foundation on the word compassion, can you just describe to us, what does that really mean to you?
It means understanding liberty versus freedom, understanding responsibility versus the will of doing whatever I want to do. And compassion is not a weakness, it's actually a strength. You become compassionate, which is just an emotion. So we could see, you know, a stray animal looking frail or thirsty or hungry. And we could have compassion and say, poor thing, it's going to die from hunger. But that doesn't lead to action, which is why I made the word compassivist. And it's, you know, it's an adjective, when we say, or a noun to describe when we say we are compassivists. It basically means that we're not just looking at that animal and saying, poor thing, it's going to die, and we feel bad and we may shed a tear, but it means we're going to act. We felt compassion, we're going to act. How are we going to act? We're going to either get some food for the animal, we're going to take it to a shelter, we're going to take it home. Whatever we're going to do, we're going to make sure that that animal doesn't suffer. And to minimize the suffering with your actions is the action of compassion. So compassion being the emotion, the actual physical action of it, the activism of it, is how are you going to change that? And that's what I built the whole Compassivist Octopus on. It's built on the idea that our parts should work to make the whole suffer as minimal as possible. Because I also am not going to be crazy ambitious and say, we're going to abolish suffering, because that's not a reality. I mean, you know, I could, right after this interview, I could get off my seat and fall and trip and break an arm. Yeah. It happens. We're not going to, eliminate it.
It's interesting that you added the qualifier of compassion requires action, And so I can't have compassion for, some little old lady trips and falls in the street. I'm so compassionate about her. If I don't get out there and help her, I got to go and help her up in order for it to actually be
That's what got
happening.
us where we are. That exact attitude is what got us where we are. The hypocrisy of thinking we can have compassion without the action.
That's strong. And so if caring for the outcome of what we see, pity, empathy, whatever it may be, is not compassion, what is it?
I think when you feel a certain way, it's the precursor to activism. But if you go to Buddhism, for example, not religion, just Buddha, he was the first person that we have in the written word that kind of came up with the modular mind. And he said something like, if a lion is in front of you right now, your mind's not going to be thinking economics. It's going to be thinking, how do I get away from this? How do I stay alive? It's, fight or flight. That's coming through you. Now, if you're in a shoe store trying to buy a pair of shoes and you're bargaining for a better price, your economic mind is there. But I took that to understand it this way. What if we can take the Jesus mentality of compassion, do unto others how you want to, and added that into the modular mindset and said, let's keep compassion there all the time. Let's make it a fixed module. And then let's add to it these activating modules of, should I run from the lion or should I give in and just lay down and let the lion eat me? And that becomes secondary. But the first module should be the compassion module of, maybe it's not a good idea to gouge the lion's eye just because I want to get away. So in extreme situations, if you can maintain your compassionate module, then the answers to how you're going to activate become different. Now, if you don't have that, and if you're just going to sit there and say, oh, well, and oh, but, and whatever, nobody that I've met is comfortable taking a little lamb and just ripping it in half and barbecuing it and eating it. But so many people are comfortable going to the supermarket and buying lamb chops. So that's compassion. We feel compassionate for the lamb that's been separated from its mom and going to the slaughterhouse and all those things, but we don't see it. So the compassion is at a distance and we feel comforted by it. But then when we go to the supermarket, we see it nicely packaged. We don't associate it with that little animal. And so it's fine. So these are the ways that we've kind of diverted and misaligned and misinformed ourselves to make compassion seem like this overly loving attitude where we're all hugs and kisses to each other and we won't hurt each other, but we're not willing to act on it. And that's the problem for me.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. And I love how it's come down to compassion only exists if you take action. And that's something that I know we've iterated out a few times, but it's such a strong fundamental point. And you're a very smart guy, Ali, and I have found even the smartest people in the world really appreciate it when you break things down, you don't make them think so hard. Compassion requires action. Like, I'm planting that seed right now. I don't need to go and do any formulas to understand that. That's just what it is. And I'm curious if you could tell me, take us back to you're running a gigantic hedge fund. You're one of the wealthiest people in Canada. And there was this turning point where you knew something had to change. Can you take us back there and walk us through
Sure.
your process for how you arrived here?
Okay. So really quickly, what happened is, as you said, I was running the show there, and I used to take my lunches. And this is funny. A lot of people in smaller towns may not know this from your audience, but if you go to New York, you go to Toronto, you go to these big financial centers. In the center of the financial buildings and the financial district, you always have a lot of homeless people. It kind of plays two ways. And so every time I used to come out of my building, there was a bunch of homeless people there. I used to take one of them and go to lunch, and it wasn't because I cared. Okay. Back then, my mindset was very different. I didn't care. It was because it gave me some perspective and insight into other people's lives. So I always enjoyed learning more, always in my life. And so these encounters would teach me. And I'd get to know them. And there was the same people there all the time. So I'd come into the office, leave the office. Hey, you know, one time when I went with one of the guys to a fast food joint, the owner said, he's not going to serve us. And I said, why? He said, he's a bum. And I said, he's a paying customer. It's not, you know, you can't, there's no law. As long as he's wearing a shirt, he's wearing shoes. There's no other law that says he can't be in a restaurant. And he said, no, he's a bum. If I let him sit in the restaurant today, customers are going to leave, or he's going to try and come in the next day, all that. And I said, you know, you're judging this person by the financial merit of this person versus where you or other people in this restaurant are standing now. And you're really, you know, degrading the person. By that measure, I should stand on your counter and, excuse my language, and pee right all over you, because my value financially is so much further than where you are to him, that if you're treating him this way, it qualifies me to treat you that way by the same equation and the same measure, because that's how it is. And if you don't serve this guy, I have nothing to do in my afternoons. I'm going to get my lawyer, and I'm going to make this a field day for myself. And so he,
That
you
would
know,
have
his
been
wife,
a that would have been an
yeah.
interesting headline, you know, stock Canadian stockbroker pees on manager
I
at
know,
restaurant.
you see, and so
Arrested. There's
I
like a
leave.
picture of you in the
Yeah,
handcuffs.
exactly. But then, you know, it's a human rights violation at that. You know, you can't say that to someone. And so his wife came and, you know, calmed things down. She actually told us to sit down. She served us. She didn't even ask us to pay. And the poor guy was staring at me. He was trying to run away because he was scared, right? And then he started. He said, "What are you doing? Are you crazy?" And I said, "Why?" He's like, "So we just left. Like, why all the trouble?" And I was like, "No, you have a right. Like, you're human." And we left. I didn't understand all of this at that moment. It was just like the adrenaline. But when we left, I was like, "Wow, what are we doing? Where are we living? You know, like, we no longer see each other as humans. I only get treated the way I do because I pull up in these cars that almost nobody drives in the city, and I pull up and people know who I am, and so I get treated differently. But how are really people really treating each other? I mean, you know, what's going on?" So instead of going back to work, I left. I left, jumped on a plane, never came back. That was the beginning of, you know, me starting to think about legacy versus profit. And at that point, I was, you know, I'd already achieved a substantial amount of money. I mean, we're not talking $1 million or $5 million. I'd achieved a lot of money. And there wasn't much more in that sense, but I was craving for legacy. I was craving to do something that makes change. And I wanted to do something that makes better change. And so that's where it started. I realized I'm addicted to money. That was, you know, chapter two of this, where I realized everything I was trying to do with legacy was about me using my material force to shape what I wanted to be, like many people do, you know, have my name on a hospital building, or you know, call it the Horiat Fund or something. And so it really was starting out in that way until I realized that is the problem. The problem is people like me who dictate, who become tyrannical leaders in change, and they don't allow the voices to come out, and they don't allow equality to come out. I am the problem, even though I'm trying to help it. And so I knew I had to let it go and start from scratch and work up through a collective and with people who are able to come together and make a change. So gave it all away one day. And as you reminded me earlier, threw my phone in the river so that I couldn't call my lawyer and say, take it back. I actually
I
did
changed my
that.
mind.
I know, I know, I
It,
did
you know,
that.
sometimes, and I've seen it expressed so many different ways, burn the boats, burn the bridges, you know, just like you cannot leave an open lane to go back to what you used to be, or
Exactly.
your survival brain will just retreat at the first opportunity of difficulty. And so
Yeah,
it's
because if
adamant.
you're an alcoholic and you want to quit, you're not going to leave that one bottle of champagne to celebrate with that you've quit, right? Because that's going to be the bottle that's going to take you right back. So you got to let it all go. And that's what I did. I let it all go. Took a few years of me. I was homeless at one point. You know, it took a little time of me going through the trenches and making my way back, raising some funds and really bringing it together with Compassive East and kind of all the programs that we have. And, you know, the way that I really believe a collective in action with a mindset of compassion is going to be the change maker. I mean, today, a lot of people feel compassion. You know, here they feel it. You know, we all feel it. We all want to reduce suffering. We all want a better world. But so long as we don't have to act, so long as somebody comes along with some genius idea, and we're fine giving the trillions of dollars. I mean, you know, we'll give Elon Musk all the billions to come up with some idea, right? And we're fine with that. We've been accustomed to that. And so we're looking for the solutions as we sit back, and we just want to go to the pharmacy and buy that pill that cures everything. And it's not going to work that way. That's what I'm here to tell people. It's not. We need to get up, we need to act, and we need to go for the changes we want to see. And that is what democracy is about as well. That is part of our nature as humans, to want liberty.
Makes sense. And so Compassivist, who is a great person to reach out and connect with you? How do we get involved? How do we learn more?
To get involved, socials are easy because Compassivist is a unique word. So it's at Compassivist everywhere. And the website's, compassivist.com, where you can kind of go through it and see all of the different parts of Compassivist there, and get connected with the parts that you feel resonate with you in the best way. I mean, we've got arts programs, we've got sustainability programs, carbon labeling programs, publishing house, anthologies. We've got all sorts of music, film, all sorts of programs and ways where people can interact, come together, and really table and say, this is how I'm willing to act. And that's what it's about, building this monster-sized collective over the years that really has some sway and has some say in the public sector.
That's awesome. Love that. So we're going to wrap from here. For those of you who are interested in getting involved with Ali Horiat's Compassivist, you can go to compassivist.com, a new word that has been added to the English language, thanks to Ali. So Ali Horiat, everybody, thanks so much. Once more, that's compassivist.com. And for those of you who are in your morning commute, in the gym, or somewhere out in the field, snap a selfie. Tag me at JT Literally. Show me what you do while you're in the do zone. And one more time, if you're looking to boost sales, cut costs, free up your time for higher value tasks, Anabots will build a custom AI assistant for your business so you can get more done and less time. You can learn more at anabots.ai. All right. Hey, that's it for this episode. Let's get to work.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Do Zone podcast. If you're running a service-based business that's looking to grow this year, let's talk about how we can slingshot you into momentum with a quick injection of cash and sales. Our clients typically see results in as little as 7 days. To learn more about what we do, you could go to factor1.io. Once again, that's factor1.io. We'll see you next time.